Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
And you're welcome to Game On here on 2FM. It's Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock tonight. Coming up on the show, Tony O'Donoghue is live from Portugal as the Republic of Ireland squad are put through their paces ahead of their upcoming European Championship qualifiers. We've Mark Langdon on European football, including the latest news around Kylian Mbappe and Gareth Bale. Gary Murphy on all things golf. Brooks Koepka, the number one golfer on the planet after his win at the US PGA. And we're going to hear from Eddie Jordan on the death of Formula One legend Niki Lauda. 51552 is our text number at Game On 2FM if you want to get in touch on Twitter. And Gary Murphy is with me in studio. How are you doing, Gar?
Very well, Hugh, thank you.
Good. Brooks Koepka, we'll get into this a little bit later on. I mean, wire to wire, very composed until the back nine in the last round. We wondered, would there be a wobble for the sake of entertainment, I think, for the neutral viewer. It was great that there was a wobble because it stopped me turning the channel.
Yeah.
But he got the job done.
He did, and I don't think Dustin Johnson is getting enough credit, really, because
he was the only player in the top 24 to break par or hit par in that final round.
Yeah, from the leading groups, his golf was phenomenal. And I think he got really unlucky on 16. He had to push because even though Koepka was wobbling a little bit, you still don't think he's going to come back to you. And had he parred in, obviously we would have had a playoff. But
I saw you had a little go at Alan Shipnuck, who was berating Dustin Johnson for his, the way he played 16, and I was with you 100%. I mean, he had to go for it.
Yeah, it's like, I obviously afterwards had a bit of an inside track because I'm chatting to Bo, who's Shane Lowry's caddy, and you know, Rory and Shane in that situation have a big advantage, as Matt Wallace had, because they're kind of grown up playing in rubbish weather, so they're used to playing in strong winds. And Johnson had an awesome tee shot down 16. I had to go, okay, he can't go long, which isn't trying to go long, but I thought his comments were ridiculous. I really did. And
he tends to stray out there, Alan Shipnuck, at times. You know, I like his writing generally, but some of his stuff on Twitter is,
I would be, if you're going to be critical of Johnson, be critical for his tee shot on 17. You know, because he came off it.
Mm.
It didn't happen. He kind of quit on it a little bit, so he could be critical of that. But how? I think it's. It's just clickbait to be critical of someone coming down the second or third last hole in a major championship when your nerves are jangling, everything is shaking, you're trying your very best to do it. And if 17, maybe a tiny bit, but not 16, he hit it straight down the top of the flag into a 30 mile an hour wind. You know, it was half a club too much. But
yeah.
I thought it was great to see him being in cruise control for 3.5 days, and then
having to
get it done. As Radar said in commentary, he's starting to look like, you know, 14, he's starting to look like Norman looked when Faldo was,
yeah,
and he came lead through it, you know. I thought his third shot into the last was phenomenal.
Yeah, no, it really was. It was a kind of a real test of character, those last few holes, and he passed with flying colours. We're going to get into him a little bit later on because I have a lot of questions that I want to get your thoughts on about Brooks Koepka, the number one golfer in the world, and where he stands right now. Equally as well, I have to say, I haven't enjoyed anything in a long time as much as seeing Shane Lowry shoot 5 over in the first round, looked like he was going to miss the cut, and then finish in the top 10. And it was just a testament to Shane's just grit, determination, and also his ability to just grind out scores as well when a lot of people were kind of falling back behind him. And he was rewarded with a top 10 finish, which I thought was fantastic.
Yeah, only his second top 10 finish in a major championship outside of his second place when Dustin Johnson won his major. So a huge week for Lowry, and it will give him a lot of confidence. He has all the ability in the world, and it's great to see him back up in, you know, in that sort of field with the best players in the world.
Yep, 100%. 51552, let us know if you enjoyed the US PGA or at least the last 9 holes where there was a bit of entertainment value. I've been watching, I just finished up a series on Netflix called Drive to Survive. It's about the Formula 1 season from 2 years ago, and it's a fantastic watch. Even if you're not a big Formula 1 fan, it's an insight into the politics of the sport, the competitive nature of the drivers as well, and what there's only 20 seats, you know, for every season that goes by there are 20 seats in Formula 1. If you're one of those those guys, you're lucky to be in the sport, but what you need to do to hang on to your seat, the politics that comes into play, the relationship between the drivers and the teams, and the cost, and
yeah, they're not cheap, those seats, are they?
No, exactly. Yeah. And the outcomes as well, and how everything hinges on how well the drivers do. It's a brilliant, brilliant series on Netflix, Drive to Survive Formula 1. I'd highly recommend it. But Niki Lauda passing away today, a legend of the sport, just reading some of the obituaries and people's thoughts on him. I didn't realise that he was so instrumental in Lewis Hamilton's career and actually pushing him forward to be the driver that he is today, and some even suggesting that without Niki Lauda that Lewis Hamilton might not have had the career that he has had so far. Such was the level that he had conviction and his ability.
I think in the world that we're living in today with social media and everything else, an appearance seems to be the number one thing. For him to come back from that burn and just... It was just all about his sport and all about his driving.
Yeah, in a matter of weeks, Gary.
Yeah, incredible. It just shows the character of the man. What a great champion he was.
Yeah, we're going to get Eddie's thoughts on that a little bit later on. As I said, he was on Morning Ireland this morning, and just universal acclaim for the champion that Niki Lauda was as well in what is, as I just said, an extremely tough and competitive sport. Okay, let's cross over to Portugal, because a training camp for the Republic of Ireland led by Mick McCarthy, who named his squad earlier this week, but Tony O'Donoghue is there for us. Tony, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, if you mentioned Niki Lauda, the Ireland team, you have to go down Ayrton Senna Boulevard before you get to the campus in Quinta del Lago, and that's where they'll be for the next few days with intensive training ahead of the Denmark and Gibraltar games. So weather is good, R&R is part of it, but it's a chance for Mick McCarthy to, you know, assess some players he's not so sure of, maybe get to know players he hasn't met before even. With the obvious prospect, of course, of taking on Denmark away and Gibraltar at home, and hoping to get full points from that if possible.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the players that I suppose attracted attention in the initial 27-man squad that was named during the week was that of 18-year-old Luke O'Connell. Tony, Mick McCarthy says, look, I mean, he's here for the week unless he goes out and absolutely blows me away. So it's an opportunity for him to have a look at Luca, who obviously was very good in the championship for Bolton. But what's your initial thoughts around how he might fit in this week and his chances of actually making that big impression?
Yeah, it's something I put to Mick today because, you know, he's had 15 games in the championship at 18 years of age. That's we're in possibly Declan Rice territory. I'm not suggesting that he's the same type of player as Declan Rice, but there's a lot of parallels. I said it to Mick, you know, we've had the Jack Grealish situation, we've had the Declan Rice situation, and now Luke O'Connell, who's Liverpool born. He's been involved in the underage setup. I saw him playing with the under-17s last year. He's attracted a hell of a lot of interest in a team that was relegated, in a team in turmoil. He fought his way in and he played really, really well. So a lot of people are looking at this guy. So Mick is kind of saying, look, if he burns it up, if he does the business, yeah, well, he'll definitely have a chance, have an opportunity, but he's not going to be rushing him into the Gibraltar game just to put a cap on him and keep him as ours, because we'd hate to see yet another prospect, a really good prospect, start their football apprenticeship, if you like, in the Ireland underage setup, and then take their gear bag and their boots and off to England, you know. Having said that, he said, you know, he's not going to be changing too much of the team that played Georgia. There's no reason to change it at the moment. He has Conor Hourihan, Glenn Whelan involved in the playoffs, Richard Keogh as well, of course, for Derby, and Josh Cullen is involved with Charlton in their playoffs. So those players aren't here in Portugal, are likely to come in afterwards, but at the moment, yeah, it's up to Luke O'Connell. He's never seen him play in the flesh, Mick, so he'll have a chance to see him up close and personal starting tomorrow morning.
What does Mick feel, just his general sense about the next two games? Obviously Gibraltar at home should be a formality. I say that even in the context of their struggle away last time out in the howling wind, but Denmark away is going to be a hugely defining game, you would feel. Is there a sense of Mick looking forward to this, Tony, or is he kind of apprehensive about it?
Well, I think he's looking forward to it because, you know, he gets the sense that, you know, the squad want to be here. Yes, it's the end of season. Some of them have been on holidays for some time, but they're all anxious and coming over here and being involved in this training camp. And that includes the likes of players like Shane Long, who wasn't involved before because of injury, Callum Robinson, Alan Brown, Callum O'Dowda. So a lot of those will be getting the Mick factor, the Mick treatment for the first time. He'll be spreading a lot of love because the vibes in the camp are good, you'd have to say, but they would be, I suppose, at this point. We haven't played Denmark yet. They've been something of our nemesis recently. Having said that, it's 17 days till we play played them. It's a long time to build or to work from any momentum of the first two results. And anything can happen. We can lose players to injury in those playoffs. God forbid that we have any injuries to be concerned about. But Denmark is the game, of course. To go away there and not lose even would be a great result coming home to then play Gibraltar. But, you know, I always think Chris Jackson is their talisman. He has a Champions League final to look forward to with Tottenham. And we'll see how much that expends his energy and takes it out of him emotionally and physically ahead of yet another game against the Republic of Ireland, which Denmark certainly aren't looking forward to.
Yeah, from a very selfish point of view, you wouldn't be totally unhappy if maybe Robertson went in with a two-footed lunge on Eric's, without doing him any serious injury, but just enough to keep maybe out of the Republic of Ireland match. Tony, we'll let you go.
As soon as he scores the winner for Spurs in the 89th minute, yeah, and then hobbles off afterwards, I'm happy with that.
Yeah, well, I have a Liverpool fan in front of me and one on the line here, so look, a Spurs fan on the line, so look, we won't get too deep into it. Tony, enjoy the rest of the week. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks a million.
All right, cheers to you. Good luck.
Tony O'Donoghue there from Portugal, the Republic of Ireland training camp. Alan Kelly, the goalkeeping coach, of course, former international himself, was out before the media today. And this is a flavour of what he had to say.
We had a great goalkeeper come along every generation, it seemed, for Ireland. But at the moment, is this the best crop of young keepers we've had?
Well, it's been exciting, hasn't it? I mean, you look at Darren Randolph and how he's taken over that jersey and made it his own. And, you know, such an athletic and a fantastic goalkeeper, especially for Ireland. You know, and look at Mark Travers now, you know, making his debut in the Premier League. You know, some of the sort of next generation coming through, but making a mark as well. You know, not just, you know, being brought along for the ride. He's, you know, to be playing in the Premier League at his age, at the end of the season, has been a fantastic, you know, rise for his, you know, his development, really. And obviously we've got Shonan as well, who's working out in Christensen and doing well there. So it's good to get them under my wing, shall we say, and put them through the paces and see what they can really do under pressure and in training.
We have an undisputed number one, of course, though, in Darren Randolph, making the championship team of the year. He's just getting better with age, it seems.
Yeah, again, I look back and I remember his Premier League debut for Charlton at Liverpool many, many moons ago. And, you know, to see that goalkeeper then and see what he is now and so in control of what he does and... you know, the belief that gives to his team, whether that's Ireland or whether it's Middlesbrough. I think he's been a mainstay for Middlesbrough this year, player of the year. And equally the same with Ireland as well. So, you know, I think to have that ingredient as a goalkeeper where you're safe, secure, sound, but can make unbelievable saves like he did in Gibraltar, for instance, you know, it's everything's coming right for Darren and, you know, and no one deserves it better.
That's Alan Kelly speaking to Tony earlier on today in Portugal. We've had a text in on 51552, three radio stations covering the live stream of Pats and Derry tonight and eight Irish soccer podcasts a week. We've come a long way. We certainly have. And, you know, the drama last night as well, Dundalk, one of our colleagues over in the sports department happened to be up at the match there and put up a video earlier on today. Old Big Kev was there, Dundalk, with that 95th minute penalty and the whole crowd going bananas. They are still top of the league, 40 points apiece with Shamrock Rovers, who also won last night. And Bowes, obviously might feel a little bit hard done by, but it's fourth against fifth tonight. Derry City, who are in fourth, playing St. Patrick's Athletic at Richmond Park. Eric White is there for us, Eric, and you know, two sides battling it out to close in on the top three, if you like.
Up with the sight of each other. This is their third meeting in 5 weeks, having met at the Brandywell as well just 11 days ago in a game which finished 1-1. But you're absolutely right, incentives for both sides, although neither have been overly impressive of late. St. Pat's without a win in their last four. No, a victory would see them close the gap on their opponents to just 1 point. Derry's winning run has deserted them somewhat in recent weeks, just one win in 7 now for them, but yet a victory tonight would see them move to just within 1 point of third place Bohemians at the halfway stage. As for the team news, team sheet has just been put in front of me here. St. Patrick's Athletic, they make one change from their 1-1 draw here against Bowes on Friday night. Rhys McCabe comes in for the injured Connor Clifford. Harry Kenny's side playing a 3-5-2 formation at the moment with Brendan Clark Park in goal. The three centre-backs, Dave Webster, Kevin Toner and Kieran Kelly. Simon Madden and Ian Birmingham, the wing-backs. In midfield, Reese McCabe, Jimmy Lennon and Dara Markey. And up front, Gary Shaw and Mikey Drennan. Jimmy Lennon, of course, named today in Stephen Kenny's Republic of Ireland under 21 squad for that Toulon tournament. Derry with 24 hours less to prepare for this game tonight. They were in action at the Sligo Showgrounds on Saturday. It was a drab 0-0 draw. Manager Declan Devine attempting to freshen things up a bit tonight with starts for Conor McDermott, Gerarda Bruna and Adrian Delap. So they line out with Peter Cherry in goal across the back of Conor McDermott, Darren Cole, Owen Toll and Kieran Call. In midfield, Kieran Harkin, Greg Sloggett and Gerarda Bruna. And up front, Adrian Delap Jr., Ogedi Uzokwe and David Parkhouse leading the line. Gerarda Bruna, the Argentinian who was a youth with both Real Madrid and Liverpool, hasn't seen a lot of action this season for Derry, but he did score a spectacular free kick here when the two sides met at Richmond earlier in the season. That was a game which Derry won by 3-1. They were 3-0 up inside half an hour. I'd expect a different contest tonight in this game, kicking off at 7:45. You
lovely stuff, Eric, thank you so much for that. So we might check in if there's a goal between kickoff and the end of the show at 8 o'clock today. We'll just talk to Mark in a second, but I saw ESPN today, Gar, reporting that potentially Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and I don't know how seriously you take these stories, to get Mark's view in a second, they're potentially Manchester United and Solskjaer will ask Paul Pogba to become club captain in the hopes of persuading him to stay. He's been linked with Real Madrid. He's been linked with the move away. And I just wonder, why would you do this for somebody who, I don't know, there's huge question marks over a lot of his performances this season. I know stats-wise and goal-wise he's chipped in with his fair share, but he's never struck me as the kind of guy to lead by example, to lead performances, his social media habits and all that kind of stuff. Just form an opinion. I don't know him, obviously. None of us do. I just think, why would you offer the incentive of a captain's armband for a club that desperately needs leadership for a guy with serious question marks over his temperament? I don't see how that's a positive.
I think because he fits their brand at the moment, their commercial angle. They've spent 90 million on him plus his wages. You know, can they offload him, get their money back? I don't know if they can. Maybe Solskjaer is going to he might be the rock that he perishes on if he hangs everything on Pogba to be the guy to deliver, and he doesn't.
I don't know. Does the captaincy obviously is quite important, because
who would you have as the captain?
The players, I don't know. In that squad. Well, I mean, if De Gea was still there next season, I think he'd be.
I think where they're at, they need their centre midfielder as their captain. So, you know, there's no centre half you could pick. Smalling.
Yeah, but someone like Pogba, who, like Roy Keane, has been fairly critical of him in terms of his work rate, his aptitude on the pitch, his lack thereof. And I just, like, someone like him, I'm just saying, if this guy is your captain and this guy is the guy who leads the way, I'm too old school in this and the Roy Keane kind of style.
I'd be the same. I'd agree with you. I wouldn't. If I was a United fan, I wouldn't have him near the place. Or then, you know, it's all about the man management. I mean, Ferguson was famous for being a man manager, and he got rid of him for $500,000. And he's the genius behind the, you know, phenomenal success that United had. I can't imagine that he would have agreed to spend $90 million to bring him back in there.
No.
But it's going to be fascinating this summer what happens at United, because they need to offload 8 players and bring in 4 or 5 proper players.
What do you think, Mark? Is Paul Pogba the kind of guy who could do a decent job as captain for Manchester United, do you think?
I'm going to disagree with you. I think that maybe he could. I'm not saying that I would absolutely trust him to do it, but if he is going to stay and he's your best player and he plays in probably the most influential position, the central midfield area, I think there is some sense to it if he's going to stay, if he's happy to stay, then I think giving him that extra responsibility may bring out the best in him. Certainly for the French national team, he's seen as more of a leader than he is, say, for Premier League observers. He gave one of the halftime team talks in the World Cup final. There was a documentary in France about that success, and it's surprising actually how he kind of rallied the dressing room. A different kind of persona to what I think a lot of people have got him down as. But obviously his behaviour this season at United just hasn't been good enough. But I mean, if he stays, I can certainly see the centre. There's nobody else in that team that I would really trust to be captain. I mean, the word is that Ashley Young will be the club captain, but of course he won't play every week, I wouldn't have thought. And that in itself probably shows, you know, one of many problems that Solskjaer's got this season or over the summer for next season.
I totally understand from a kind of a psychological standpoint, giving somebody responsibility and giving them the option to grow into that role. And maybe Pogba is one of those people. And again, I'm saying this, like looking at it from an outside perspective in, not knowing him at all. And as you see, he does seem to have a different persona when he's playing for France. But I think fundamentally, you need to get a commitment out of him first and foremost, right? And even if he doesn't necessarily want to be there next season, if he is there and if he's going to stay, he's got to commit.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's, if he does stay, I mean, he's sort of really their best hope of sort of getting back up towards the top four. Because once you get rid of the players that are not good enough, and then you get rid of the ones that don't want to be there, if we're assuming, say, that Pogba does, once you get rid of those, I mean, how many people are left at Manchester United? De Gea and Pogba and Rashford are probably the three that they're looking, you know, to build the team around if they can get De Gea and Pogba to stay. I don't see Rashford as captain material. Always slightly nervous about a goalkeeper doing it. I know Hugo Lloris does it for Tottenham, but I prefer it to be an outfield player. So I mean, I'm looking at sort of a centre half. I mean, I wouldn't have Smalling or Jones or Lindelof down as a leader. I mean, Matic maybe, but is he going to be in the team every week? I mean, you know, there's really not many options, and that just highlights the problem. So I mean, I can see some sense in giving it to your best player as long as he's committed. And of course, I've absolutely no idea if he is committed.
Okay, all right, we'll watch the space then. So the story around Kylian Mbappe at Paris Saint-Germain is an interesting one, Mark, for a few different reasons. I know he was accepting his Player of the Year award on Saturday or Sunday night, and he kind of hinted in his speech about a project elsewhere. We know Real Madrid are kind of keen to strengthen their squad. What's the latest regarding Mbappe's future?
Yeah, I mean, this was, I think this depends the way how you take it, because it was quite cryptic. He spoke about a new role. Now, some people have said that new role is being the centre forward for Real Madrid. Other people have said that it's more a case and have interpreted it as something that they want. Mbappe wants to be the centre forward at Paris Saint-Germain next season and be the one that they kind of rely on most. You know, at the moment, Mbappe, when everybody's fit, plays out on the right-hand side of that front three with Neymar on the left and Cavani through the middle. But Mbappe, top scorer, he's the young player of the year, he's the official player of the year as well. So I'm taking it that he meant more that he wants sort of more responsibility and this Paris Saint-Germain team to be his team, you know, and to build the whole side around him. Other people have suggested that maybe that means Real Madrid. But where do Real Madrid find the money to buy Kylian Mbappe? Mbappe, in the current, if you think that Neymar cost 200 million, you said there about Pogba, 100 million. I mean, Mbappe would be in excess of 200 million. He would become the world's most expensive player. There's no doubt. I don't think about that. PSG don't need the money at all, you know, given their financial backing. Mbappe is a Paris Saint-Germain supporter, a French World Cup winner. I just don't see it happening, not yet. I think he's frustrated with their Champions League exit, as is everybody at Paris Saint-Germain, and the lack of competitiveness within that French league. But I'm not sure that it necessarily means a new club, more a new responsibility within that kind of organisation.
And part of that frustration surely was around the fact that Neymar wasn't fit for the crunch end of the season. I mean, if Neymar had been on the pitch, maybe it would have been a completely different story. We don't know. So is it a case of PSG just persuading Mbappe, who's quite ambitious, he's probably, as you said, probably the best young player in the world right now, that, you know, his future belongs in Paris, and that actually next season, if Neymar is back fit and maybe with some more investment over the summer, that they can strengthen and give him the platform that he feels he deserves?
Yeah, Neymar, he has taken liberties since he's gone to Paris Saint-Germain on various occasions, but the injury this time was genuine, and it's happened sort of for the last 2 years in their Champions League run. I think that's sort of slightly unfortunate, but there's no doubt that Paris Saint-Germain have had a mess of a transfer window in terms of leaving them really short in central midfield, an absolute key area of football, obviously, and they just haven't been good enough in that position. A kind of war between the sporting director Enrique and also the coach Thomas Tuchel over who should be the midfielders to come in. If you remember, they tried to buy Idrissa Gueye from Everton right on transfer window. That fell through. They ended up spending sort of 35 million on Paredes, who arrived from Russian football, and Thomas Tuchel just didn't play him. And, you know, that is a problem off the pitch that Paris Saint-Germain have got, where the club's not in sync. And I think, again, that's probably what Mbappe is talking about. You know, he wants this to be a unified approach, and maybe he went about it the wrong way, because most people during that sort of awards dinner kind of were playing, you know, we're speaking about Emiliano Sala, of course, who died in such tragic circumstances from Nantes, and, you know, it was quite a somber occasion, and some people felt that Kylian Mbappe, in speaking about himself and making it about himself, actually chose, you know, the wrong time to do that, and maybe that's just Paris Saint-Germain all over.
Okay, right, we'll move on to Real Madrid then, because Real are being linked with everybody at the moment, including Mbappe. Hazard is now, we believe, you know, has obviously been seriously flirting with the chance of going to Spain as well. But over the weekend, they played their last home game. They lost 2-0 to Real Betis, and Gareth Bale was on the bench. There was a subsequent report afterwards from one journalist that Zinedine Zidane said that, you know, had he had the option of using a fourth substitution, that he wouldn't have picked Gareth Bale. That turned out to be false, Mark, but still, Gareth Bale on the bench, not being used, walking down the tunnel, not saying goodbye to Real Madrid fans. It does look like his time at Real Madrid has come to an end.
Yeah, absolutely. Looks over for him. I mean, quite a sad way to end, given that he played a huge part in their Champions League successes, scored in a couple of the finals. Even when he didn't score in sort of normal time, he managed to put his penalty away against Atletico Madrid, scored a brilliant wonder goal in the Copa del Rey against Barcelona. It could and should have ended better. It was a sad sight to see him not even go on. I mean, it wasn't a lap of appreciation, it was more like a lap of shame that the Real Madrid players had to go on, given how bad their season has been. But, you know, he didn't partake in that, straight down the tunnel. Zidane has told him that he won't play anymore. There have been reports that Gareth Bale said back to him, well, you know, you'll have to pay me my money, I'm not going anywhere, I'll just improve my golf. He's on in excess of £500,000 a week at Real Madrid, so it's around about, I think it's sort of €600,000 a week. So Real Madrid have got a massive job trying to get rid of him, because there's nobody that Gareth Bale would want to go to, and he sees himself, I assume, as sort of still an elite player at an elite club. There's nobody that's going to pay anywhere near that kind of money. So you could be looking at Real Madrid having to pay €300,000 maybe a week to get him off the wage bill and give him to somebody else. But even at half of that, I don't see too many clubs paying €300,000 a week for Gareth Bale. And that is a desperate situation for Real Madrid, because they need to raise finances if they're to launch these bids for Pogba and for Hazard and maybe for Eriksen or Kylian Mbappe or Neymar or whoever it is. They need to get rid of about five or six of their first team. Toni Kroos has already signed a new contract, so it won't be him departing. Gareth Bale, they're desperate to get rid of him, but I don't see a natural spot for him anywhere at the moment.
There's a question for you, Gary, at the Christmas quiz. Who is the best played golfer on the planet? Answer, Gareth Bale.
Huh? I just love to live in Madrid so I could coach him at his golf if he's going to play a bit more golf. Certainly be up in my standard fee. But that's,
yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
It's a sign of the times. It's vile, really, to be honest.
Yeah.
A young, you know, guy whose career is going to be over in the blink of an eye. Why? He doesn't need money. Not, you know, he can go wherever he wants to go.
This is the thing. Like, somebody who's he's made no effort as well to, it seems, to ingratiate himself into the old affections. He hasn't even learned more than four or five words of Spanish.
I know, but how daft is the president to give him that contract, knowing that he's a kind of iffy player with no sell-on value?
It was a panic, though, because Ronaldo was leaving, Mark, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that when they sort of got into, I mean, Gareth Bale, I mean, you could argue in all those Champions League successes, you know, has kind of repaid the transfer fee,
yeah,
at least, you know, in terms of what he's offered on the pitch when he's been fit. But it's always the wages. And, you know, when you get someone like Alexis Sanchez not pulling his weight at Manchester United, earning that kind of money, yeah, and Gareth Bale similarly at Real Madrid, I think it causes problems in the dressing room when other people look around at the highest paid players and think, well, you know, you're not doing anything to help us here. And you have to get rid of those players. If Gareth Bale was, you know, scoring Cristiano Ronaldo type numbers in terms of goals, I don't think anybody would begrudge him earning that money. But he hasn't done. I mean, he would probably argue that, you know, Real Madrid have kind of just destroyed his confidence, and I think there's probably an element of truth to that. But I mean, he would be better off accepting €100,000 a week and going to play for, I don't know, Tottenham or Chelsea or somebody like that, or Arsenal, whoever it may be, and get playing again.
If I was a United fan, I'd say $500,000 for Alexis Sanchez, or give that money to Gareth Bale. Gareth Bale every day of the week.
I'd definitely take him.
Yeah.
If I was United, I'd definitely go for him, and I'd definitely go for Kante as well.
Yeah.
That's what they need. They need a defensive midfielder.
Can I ask you about, before we leave it, Mark, about Mkhitaryan's situation with regards to the Europa League final? So this looks pretty appalling, really. Because of concerns over his safety, concerns that were assuaged somewhat by UEFA, but ultimately not to his satisfaction, it looks like he will not travel now to play the Europa League final. I saw Piers Morgan on Twitter today, as he is every day. He makes me laugh, to have to say. But he was calling on Chelsea to basically boycott the final now, saying if one of the players' safety can't be guaranteed, why should either club turn up? What's your understanding of all this?
Yeah, I mean, as far as it goes, Mkhitaryan definitely won't play. Of course, there's political tensions, I think it's fair to say, between Azerbaijan and Armenia. This has been going on for a while. I don't think there was ever any chance, really. I think that Arsenal, first of all, UEFA are a disgrace to play in a country where not everybody is welcome. There's no doubt about that. I mean, imagine if Mkhitaryan probably wouldn't play, in terms of starting. Imagine if this was Eden Hazard that couldn't play, or Aubameyang, or Lacazette, or somebody like that. I mean, I think there would be more of a fuss made, from the club in question. I mean, I think it would be incredible, really, if Arsenal boycotted it and just said we're not playing. But of course they won't do that, because they want to win, because they need to win to get into next season's Champions League. But I mean I would fully understand it if they refuse to play. I mean, it would be great if Chelsea did the same. I mean, there's so few fans going, you know, they could just open up Wembley and just play it there, and everybody would be a lot happier. But I mean, this really falls onto UEFA's door, to play. I've no problem with football being played around the world. I mean, I think that sometimes people are too critical when it goes to kind of these outposts, but the safety of players needs to be guaranteed, and everybody has to be welcome to play, and this is absolutely outrageous. And I mean, I hope that Arsenal and Chelsea would boycott it, but I don't think there's any chance of that actually happening. But hopefully UEFA, will learn that their lesson, and this doesn't happen again, because it's outrageous.
Really. It is absolutely outrageous. Okay, listen, Mark, thanks. I mean, but also, before we go, just a tweet from Porik. I can't believe how Fiorentina have fallen apart this year. One of four teams that could take the last relegation spot. I mean, is that it's a bit of a crumble, is it?
Yeah, I mean, anybody that sort of followed Italian football in the 90s or whatever, when Gabriel Batistuta was banging in the goals for Fiorentina, will be absolutely appalled to know that they're in this relegation battle on the final day. The fans have been at war with the owners. The owners are refusing to put in any more money. Vincenzo Montella, the coach, has had a bit of a nightmare since he went there. They were playing some nice football earlier on in the season, a lot of good young players that people were quite excited about, but their season has fallen apart completely. They still need a lot to go wrong to go down, but they're in a situation that I don't think anybody believed was possible at Christmas. It's just been a horrendous 2019 for them.
I used to love that Batistuta Fiorentina purple jersey, if anyone remembers. It was one
absolutely
of my favourites of all time.
Laviola.
Fantastic. Brilliant player as well. Mark, pleasure as always. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Mark Langdon there. You can read his stuff in the Racing Post, football editor of that. Kante to United. Don't make me sick, please, lads, says Jaron Tullamore, who's obviously not a big fan. Lads, Pogba is a luxury player. player, and it seemed like France, he has the players around him to do all the work and let him do what he wants when he wants. United don't have the squad, so Pogba looks lost. He won't do the hard work up and down the pitch for France. He has Kante to do all of that. A couple of questions in for Gary on the golf, which we'll get to in a second. We're also going to be joined by Greg Allen, who has just hightailed it back from New York to tell us all about those horrible American fans. Stay tuned.
Let's go.
This is 2FM. Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. New skin guard sensitive with unique skin guard technology, taking the pressure off the blades and your shave. Say bye to shave irritation. Gillette, the best a man can get.
Okay, you're welcome back. 51552 is our text number. Charles in number 12 has been on. Hugh, can you remind Mark that Azerbaijan is not some ignorant backwater of Neanderthals, as usually have people talking through ignorance who have never visited the country? Well, Charles, I don't know if Mark has or has not. Certainly in terms of the amateur boxers, they used to go there quite a bit because Azerbaijan is a... big into the old amateur boxing and used to spend a lot of money to host events. But regardless of whether or not you believe that, the fact that a player feels that it is not safe because of political circumstances to go and play a Europa League final is all that needs to be said on this. I mean, is it not the absolute minimum requirement, number one priority for UEFA, for any host city, that the players should feel safe when they step onto the pitch? That's all you need to ask. And if the answer to that is no from anyone, then UEFA have serious questions to ask about why they were given that venue in the first place. Even regardless of the travel problems that they have, the limited tickets for fans as well, the airport not being able to cope with the amount of fans that intend or want to go to the games. I mean, it's an absolute shambles if you ask me. And the fact that Mkhitaryan feels he won't be safe as a player, I mean, what more do you want than that? Anyway, thanks for the text as always. 51552 is our number. Gary's with me in the studio. And is Greg on the line? No, he's not. He'll be here in a couple of minutes' time. But look, just to go back to Brooks Koepka, number one golfer on the planet, as he did, you know, going from wire to wire. Huge amount of confidence, even before the event, that the majors are something that he actually finds quite easy because he just believes that he has the mentality and the mental resolve to go and beat most of the golfers out there. And if he plays his game, he's not worried at all about who can challenge him. Yet, Gary, there's something about Brooks Koepka that people just can't latch onto. What is that? And why can we not embrace this guy? I heard today somebody using the analogy of Pete Sampras in the tennis. So yeah. Dominant, but yet just couldn't warm to him for whatever reason. Are we being too harsh on him?
I think we are. I just judge him for sportsmen and women for the sport they play rather than... You know, we all thought Tiger was, you know, this test tube baby that was created to dominate golf, and he was Mr. Perfect, and he turned out to be, you know, the complete opposite to what we thought that he was. He was put up on this pedestal. I don't like putting sports people up on pedestals. I just watch their sport, enjoy that they can do something that very few people on the planet can do, and judge him on that. You know, I don't want to see him, you know, opening villages in the middle of Africa and running water or whatever. Like, he's just a golfer.
Yeah, I don't think that they're mutually exclusive necessarily. I do totally buy that argument. Like, you, putting people up on pedestals, it's just you're waiting for them to fall and crash down around you. Yeah. So you're asking for trouble. But the other side of it is there's a natural charisma, charm element that comes with these sports stars. And I
think there's a responsibility.
Okay.
There's probably a responsibility. And he has been a lot more vocal in recent times. There is a responsibility when you're the best player on the planet, because all this pressure and hype that goes with that you do have to add a little bit more perhaps to what got that you did and got you there. And that's why it's challenging for a lot of guys, and I think that's why we've seen a lot of different world number ones in the last kind of 6-7 years, when once Tiger kind of fell off the pace a little bit, but or he was injured. He's, you know, he doesn't offer a huge amount. I don't really have a problem with that.
No, I don't either. And I'm just trying to ask the question as to why it is that he's not embraced into our hearts. Greg is on the line now, and maybe might be able to give us the perspective of being there for the week in Bethpage with the New York fans, vocal as they were, which we'll come back to in a few minutes. But Greg, did you get a sense that, like, people are starting to come around to Brooks Koepka in terms of the respect that he should be afforded as a guy who's won 4 majors in the space of a couple of years?
Well, firstly, you know, you've got to respect this extraordinary achievement of 4 majors and 8 starts. Because remember, he missed the Masters last year. He was out for 3 months with a hand injury last year. So this is like a 23-month period in which he's been active for 20 months. And in those 20 months of playing, he's won 4 majors. Like, it's stuff that Tiger and Nicklaus didn't do in their careers. So we've got to afford him complete respect. Regarding his character, he can't be any other way. I really think he is just a quiet guy. He said something that was quite interesting over the weekend about people who he has really listened to over the years. And he named only a couple. And one of them that he name-checked was Graeme McDowell. And he said what he always listened to when he spoke to Graeme was how he goes about creating a score, making a score. Because Graeme, with the fairly rudimentary tools that Graeme has in his bag in terms of ball striking, has a great habit, certainly did between 2010 and 2015, of making a score. We know he won a US Open, we know he's a Ryder Cup hero, and he's done an awful lot more. He's won Scottish Opens, French Opens, back-to-back. You know, Graeme had a great ability to make scores. And Koepka, when he was on the European Tour, certainly got to know Graeme, and they both have Florida houses, so they would have got to know each other on practice grounds and on Florida golf courses. And he was one of the people he listened to. And he said that he listened to him, but he didn't often speak very much. And this is just Brooks Koepka. He's just he's a bit of a jock. You know what I mean? Like the American sports jock. We spoke about that last week because he is a supreme athlete, a very, very, like Dustin Johnson is. They'd be good basketball players. They'd be good football players. They'd be good anything players. They just happen to be golfers. And he's a reticent character. He just likes to get the job done and doesn't necessarily want to project his personality, whatever personality he has. And I believe he does.
The thing about it as well is, I mean, this is a guy, Gary, who, you know, no silver spoon in his mouth here. I mean, Florida State went over, had to do it the hard way, got nothing handed to him when he came out of college, went the European Challenge Tour route, such was his conviction in his own ability, but also his determination to make it as a pro golfer. So this is a guy who was prepared to travel into the unknown with nothing guaranteed. I mean, that just really kind of underlines the respect that I have for him as well. So it's curious to me as to why he is not embraced as the phenomenal golfer that he is.
I don't know. I think that road that he travelled, like when he turned pro as a senior in college, which is his final year, it was Jordan Spieth's first year. They went to Q School at the same time, didn't get through. But Jordan Spieth was the young wonder kid who was going to get starts in the PGA Tour. Koepka wasn't going to get that. And he came over here. And I think that's the best route for a lot of these guys, especially for a lot of the Americans, because they get so pampered in the States.
Yeah, but very few are prepared to do that. And
yeah,
he did.
But the great ones are. Great ones go, you know, Tom Lehman went to play on the Asian Tour. John Daly went to play in South Africa. You know, the guys that want to will go wherever, you know, it's have clubs will travel. And they, and I always find as well with Americans that have traveled, they're a lot more rounded opinion of the world than the ones that don't. And that is, I think, the reason why he is where. But as Greg said earlier, his injury, you cannot count out the effect that that's had on his mindset as well. Maybe he thought it was all over. You know, maybe this is, and he was a very young man. He was only, what, 27, 28 at the time. So this is, maybe he's just realised that I'm going to absolutely hammer this with conviction for 10 years and see where it takes me.
He's not lacking confidence, Greg. I listened to him on Saturday night being interviewed, and he said, yeah, I got this. I mean, and I'm the reporter in question asked him, look, is there any doubt? Is there any kind of sense of apprehension? He goes, no, I'm going to do this. Now, he did have his wobble on the back nine, and that made, as I said to Gary, for very entertaining viewing, but Dustin Johnson was coming at him, his workout partner. But he faced down that wobble, and he got past it.
I think the thing I liked most was the amount of emotion that Koepka expressed on the 18th green when he was hugged by Ricky Elliott, and a really deep, embraceful hug, which we haven't really seen anything in terms of emotional outbursts for Koepka in anything of his three previous major wins. This one meant a huge amount to him because I think the key here is, as Ricky Elliott said in an interview, the history was going to be made either way. If he had blown a 7-shot lead, that had never happened before in a major. It could have ruined his entire career for forever and ever and ever, you know, because that's the type of thing which follows you around every time. I mean, look what the 2011 Masters has done with Rory. Every time he goes to Augusta, he's reminded of his 4-stroke lead going into the final round. Can you imagine if he blew a 7-shot lead? And I think really that this expression of emotion when he won on the 18th green was down to the fact that I think this was a huge moment for him to survive, because if he didn't survive, that could be possibly the end of the Iceman sort of mentality that he has. He would just be another very, very good player prone to to failure. But I think in a way this is going to serve him well. Nicholas was brilliant at winning tournaments, winning majors, by small margins, by having his own wobbles but then fending them off and then being strong when it mattered. And Koepka was strong where it mattered. That par in 18 was really, really indicative, I think, of how strong mentally he was. Forget about the three-putt on 17. He still had that margin on 18. But the key was 15 and 16, having followed those four consecutive bogeys, he piped those two drives, even when he knew his driving wasn't good, and he had the bravery to take out his driver on both of those holes, because you needed on both of those holes. That showed character. He showed a lot of stuff on Sunday, but I think the emotion and the character that he showed opened up his personality to us all to see.
Exactly. And also, you know, you have to factor him in now for the rest of the season in terms of the majors, particularly the Open Championship with Ricky on the bag. Gary, who knows that course inside out.
Yeah, that's his home track. Pebble Beach might take away a little bit of his.
That's more of a craftsmanship, yeah. A Graeme McDowell type course.
I'd love to see Graeme go back there.
It'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but I think one thing that hasn't been mentioned is the course setup. If you look at the US Open, how much that's been a topic of conversation the last, I don't know, however many years. But the guy that sets up the USPGA, Kenny Hague, I think is his name.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't even been mentioned, so you have to commend him as well. And maybe
it's great, isn't it?
Maybe the USGA should employ him, because he did. You could have made that course ridiculous.
Yeah,
and I think as well the conditions. Had the conditions been normal, Koepka would have won it in a canter.
Yeah.
I think it was next to impossible coming in. You're seeing guys bogeying in the last four or five, six holes. You know, you don't normally see that. And I think the conditions added to the drama more than I think.
It was so tough in that back nine that Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry finished the day in a top 10 and tied for 8th place, which, you know, didn't look likely really going into the final round, much less even halfway through it. Greg spoke with both of them after their final rounds. Let's have a quick listen to what they had to say before we come back.
I guess I ended the week on a positive note, so, you know, I made the most of my opportunity to, you know, I played well just to be here for the weekend and then to make the most of the opportunity to get to play an extra couple of days and shoot two good scores, especially today. I mean, it's so tough out there. So, you know, I've moved up the leaderboard quite a lot, and, you know, my goal at the start of the day was to try and get into the top 10. Not sure if I'll crack it or not. I'm 13th at the minute, but, you know, I played well, and it's 72-hole golf tournament and got to try until the very end, and I did that this week, and it wasn't good enough to be up there in contention, but, you know, I made improvements each and every day, which was a good thing.
Yeah, look, it's, you know, it's kind of, the year has kind of gone along nicely so far. You know, there's a nice few world ranking points, FedEx Cup points, Race Dubai points there on offer today. So, it's going along nicely, and I feel like I'm doing all the right things, and I just keep doing what I'm doing and see where it leaves me in November and December. I'm just looking forward. To be honest, I haven't been home in Ireland since February, so we're going home next week. I can't wait to get home. I'm looking forward to a couple of weeks off and then playing in Canada and the US Open. So,
Was there anything in particular which sort of flicked a switch after Thursday? Because clearly, one bogey in the third round, one bogey in the second round, one bogey in the final round, that's extraordinary around here.
Yeah, Friday morning I was on the range and I was just hitting a few and I just found a rhythm, And, you know, it was great. I felt good for the last couple of days. And it's funny, you just find something on the range, and I just found it. It's nothing to do with my swing. It's just a time and a rhythm thing, and it felt good.
Can that stay for a while? Oh, maybe for the summer?
I don't know. If I could bottle it and bring it home, but sure, we know that won't happen. So we'll
stick it in the cork. Stick the cork in it, Shane. It'd be brilliant to see him go well at the Irish Open. I know he'd love to do it. But Greg, I have to say, I said to Gary at the top of the show, I was so impressed by how Shane grinded it away, played some really nice golf, and got himself into a position to put himself top 10. And you can hear it in his voice. You must have noticed as well in his body language how happy he is with his game at the moment.
Yeah, and you have to go back to Abu Dhabi, because going into Abu Dhabi, he was a player who had lost his PGA Tour card. He was facing into an uncertain sort of schedule, one which is going to be a messy schedule in 2019, but he wins his first tournament and everything changes. Now, he nearly won, certainly had a great run at winning the Heritage as well, because that was a tournament in which he almost had a gun-to-tape victory in the final round. He got caught, he had that double bogey in the 12th, but he finished top three, and he got up and down in the last to make sure he finished in the top three. So Shane has shown lots of heads-up type of grit when it counts, to keep going when things aren't going well. And you know, he's 32 now. It's time for him to do this, to add consistency to the huge amount of flair that we've seen in his ability. Remember, this is a guy who won the Irish Open this month, virtually to the week, 10 years ago.
Yep.
He was an amateur winning the Irish Open. And we've seen him win a World Golf Championship event. We've seen him win the Abu Dhabi, hitting a 3-wood 281 yards in the final hole when he needed to. And at the weekend, we saw him one shot outside the cut line after 34 holes. And he birdies 17 and pars 18. Two really tough holes to make the cut. And then runs in the weekend with 68, 69. The best weekend of anybody in the USPGA Championship to finish top 10. This is, I hope, the new Shane Lowry.
He could go well in the Open as well, Gary. I'll be on him anyway, as I always am.
Absolutely, no doubt. And, you know, the hopefully he can continue on and get the FedEx, play the playoffs, and then it's back to Europe and there's much gold to be had at the end of the season as well.
Okay, Leona Maguire had her second victory as a professional over the last weekend. It was the Symetra Classic in North Carolina. Pretty much guarantees her a full LGPA tour card for next season. This is what she had to say after a win.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice that I could sort of cruise in a little bit today. I got pushed down the stretch a lot by Steph and EJ, but yeah, I've been playing some really solid golf. My putting's been a lot better this year, and I gave myself a lot of chances last year and didn't take them. But I was saying to my caddy, John, I think this week was more the bogeys I didn't make rather than the birdies I did. So to finish the last 2 weeks off with two 5-under bogey-free rounds is pretty pleasing. Yeah, I got a busy stretch coming up, but really excited to tee it up in my first two majors as a pro. And Irish golf is really on the up right now. And I suppose with the 20 by 20 campaign, and anytime I can win like this and get more coverage for the women's game back home is only a plus. And hopefully we'll get a few more Irish girls out here.
Yeah, Greg, a lot of coverage for Leona, but she's always had to contend with this. And we were always expecting big things of her. It seems like she's taken to this pro game like a duck to water.
I think it's taken a little bit of time. This week, a year ago, she was still an amateur. I think she was turning pro around now. And it really didn't ignite for her enough. She had a very good couple of starts. She was third and 15th in her first few starts, but then began to slow down. And that was sort of inevitable in a way because her college season last year was really tiring. And you know, she has, you know, you play for your college because they're the ones piling in the money to your $50,000 or $60,000 scholarship. So by the time she got to midsummer and the end of the Symetra Tour campaign that she had last year, which was only half of the Symetra Tour campaign, she had run out of gas. And now in the last six tournaments that she's played, she's had six top fives in six tournaments, two wins, and a very narrow miss in a European Tour event where she birdied four of the five playoff holes and still lost the playoff to an eagle on the fifth tie playoff hole. So that's nearly three wins in six starts, and it is two wins in six starts. We're now seeing something very special from Leona, which is, I think, someone who's putting as well as she does everything else. Sometimes putting, it's not like she's a bad putter, she's just not a great putter sometimes. Now she's putting great. Mm. She's adding it to all her other skills. She's just about long enough. She's about 250 to 260 off the tee, and that's long enough. I think she'd still love to add a couple of yards, or a few yards. But she's becoming a bit of the complete player. I've said it all along. She's kind of a Luke Donald sort of player when Luke Donald is world number one. Good short game, good solid strong mid game, not very long, but very consistent. And let's see where she can go with this. She's on the LPGA Tour next year for sure now. And she's got half this season to take up invitations, I think, to play in the LPGA Tour, as she probably will.
Yeah, and be valuable learning curve as well for her ahead of her first full season next year. Greg, thank you so much for your time. Fresh back from New York. We'll do it all again next Tuesday. We've got a busy golf calendar coming right up. My thanks to Gary as well. Ronan Lawler produced tonight. Graeme Smith was at BCO. And we are going to leave you with the thoughts of the death today of Niki Lauda, 70 years of age, a three-time Formula One world champion, a non-executive chairman of the world champion Mercedes team, and one of the biggest names in motorsport. This morning, as you can hear, Eddie Jordan was on Morning Ireland, and this was the Niki Lauda that he knew and loved.
I would say I knew him particularly well behind the scenes because we saw each other at every Grand Prix. He was the guy who sent me into McLaren to speak to Lewis Hamilton all those years ago, and I came out on television and said that I believe that Lewis Hamilton would leave McLaren and go to this newish team, the Mercedes team. And make no mistake, everything that Lewis Hamilton has done at Mercedes, I believe, was instrumental and put together by Niki. He could see that vision. He knew he was the driver that they were going to build this great team about. And that's what's happened. You know, Lewis Hamilton will be distraught this weekend in Monaco, I'm absolutely sure, because he owes so much of his life and his success and all those world championships to Niki Lauda.
Let's go!
This is 2FM. Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Skin Guard Sensitive, the first razor of its kind designed to stop skin irritation. Revolutionary technology taking the pressure off the blades and your shave. Gillette, the best a man can get.